I'm all right.
Yeah. Good to talk to you. Are you awake?
That, a paper, right? I have a radio layer too. Are you? You're not the radio.
We're the radio.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we're the radio.
When do you go on?
Well, we're on right now.
So I have to watch my language.
No, it's okay. Your language is fine. You can say anything you'd like to say, Charles. It's okay on my show.
So, what's the name of your show?
My name is Mark Snyder, so I guess it's the
Mark Snyder Show.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say. I have so much cap.
It's really tough, you know.
Mark Snyder Show.
Or we can call it the PMP Network Show. I mean, you know, it's on PMPnetwork.com. So,
okay.
We can call it anything you like to call it. Well, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure.
I'm actually a longtime fan. I enjoy your work. And I actually particularly enjoy you when you're on, like, game shows, because you can kind of just be wild and be yourself.
They're kind of gone now.
Yeah. Well, there's a few still around, like the Hollywood Squares and stuff, but a lot of them are gone. Yeah. Did you enjoy that part, that phase?
Oh, yeah. You meet an awful lot of people, and I was very close to Mark Goodman, Goodman, Goodson.
Yep.
Goodson and Todman. He was very good to me, Mark Goodson,
yeah.
for many, many years. And I first started on the very first What's My Line in New York with Peggy Cass. Remember Peggy?
Sure, yeah.
Well, we were understudies. We had to stand by on Sunday nights from 4 until 7 by a telephone, in the event that one of the people couldn't get there because it was live. See what I'm saying?
Yeah,
or someone got sick.
Sure.
So I started as an understudy in game shows. Which is kind of silly.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The first time I remember seeing you and noticing who you were and all that was probably The Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
Oh, yes.
Which was a pretty big show. You got an Emmy nomination for it.
Yes.
It was a great show.
I got 3 recently. I mean, more Emmy nominations, but I always lose.
The
worst part is when you go after the big galley, you stand in the parking lot, and you're the only one that doesn't have a gold statue.
Well, you should bring your own. You were nominated for your work on X-Files and for Millennium and Drew Carey Show, right?
Drew Carey, yeah.
Right. Which, Drew Carey's got a fun show, huh?
Huh?
That's a fun show to do, huh?
Oh, yeah. See, they talk so low you can't hear your cues. they're very good actors. The same on Millennium.
Yeah.
When their mouths stopped moving, I talked.
You know, for us to think of you as an actor and kind of even a comedian, directing is something that you've been doing a long time that many people don't know because it's behind the scenes kind of thing. But I know you were director of Evening Shade for a couple of years, Burt Reynolds show.
I love that.
And you've been directing plays for so long.
Yes.
And so we shouldn't be shocked when Julie Harris comes in town for the Belle of Amherst and you're directing the show at the Schubert Theater.
No, the show is a beautiful show, but it opened in Boston and Elliot Norton, who was a great critic, really loved it, and then said that you won't believe who directed it, though. and he talked how nice I did, a good job I did.
Well, obviously.
I've always, I'm a teacher, I always have, helped other kids and direct scenes when I was young.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned about being a teacher. I know you've taught it, and you do teach at the faculty in North Hollywood as well as the HP Studio in New York.
Yes.
And it says here that your pupils have included Liza Minnelli,
yes,
Lily Tomlin, Bette Midler,
yes,
Peter Boyle, Gary Berghoff. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Terry Carr.
I see Peter Boyle once in a while, and he calls me Meister. He's a funny man.
He's a very talented actor, too.
Yes,
a lot of people don't realize
wonderful.
It. Yeah, he can do comedy.
I didn't know what I was going to do with him. I thought, what am I going to do with it? But they work it out themselves,
Yeah.
The teacher helps a little bit.
Sure.
But they find it themselves usually.
Hmm. It's the Belle of Amherst is an interesting play because it's about someone from the local area.
And it was such
Emily Dickinson.
Oh yes. Do you know? Have you seen it yet?
I have, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Where did you see it? New York.
I did. Yeah, I saw it when I was out there.
You were a young person.
I was very young. Yes. In fact, I was in high
school.
And
you loved it?
I liked it a lot, and I'm looking forward to seeing it this time around as well.
Well, we added some stuff to it for the tour.
What did you add to it?
About six or seven little things, eight things, some that have been on our mind since we last worked on it.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about when people see the play, like in Laguna when we started, the next couple of days the bookstores are empty from sold out of all Emily Dickinson things because people are so amazed by her. And in, I think, March, last March, I did a program in London. We did it in Lincoln Center with Miss Harris and a great, great soprano, my friend Renee Fleming. We did this program. Renee had 17 composers commission songs, original songs on Emily Dickinson texts. And it was a... Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
And it was a wonderful evening. And when we did it in London, the people in London are not that aware of Emily Dickinson because they have their own cats. You know, I mean, they have them. They're very famous over there.
Sure.
So they do need our little Emily from Massachusetts. But the reviews are so amazing. And one critic said it was the best combination of spoken and sung words that he ever came across.
Well, I mean, talking about that, the soundtrack from it, the... won a Grammy Award.
Yes, the recording.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, this is something that has a lot for everything.
And she, when I see the play, I see it, you know, quite often. And sometimes I'm just going to stay for 10 minutes because I love to smoke and drink in the lobby. I smoke a pipe. So I would go outside and smoke and drink.
So are we expecting you to come to Boston to smoke and drink?
No, I can't. It's $3,000.
Oh, so you can't do that, huh?
First class, I got to go. Mm. No, but the thing is, I always say I'm going to watch a certain little part, and I stay there and I watch the whole thing dozens and dozens of times because the audience gets such a kick out of it.
Yeah.
And it's I'll wait a little longer to this part, and then, well, I'll wait until, and then before you know it, the first act is over. Mm. But the audience is just, the way they listen in the silence, that's very noisy. The audience is so silent, it's noisy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen in the theater because, you know, plays, Miss Harris is the only actor touring at present in a play.
Right.
And before that, it was Charles Durning and she in the Gin Game.
Right.
And now plays like, you know, the Wilbur Theater and all those theaters that are so wonderful for years, they have nothing to put in them anymore. So, you know, words are fast going.
Yeah, and of course, conglomerates are buying all the theaters as well.
Yes. And then I saw Nancy Reagan on TV the other day being interviewed about the book of letters she came out with, you know,
right,
from the president. And it seems like it's unimportant, but she was quite wonderful saying that nobody writes a letter anymore. Yeah. And that's the only way you can truly express yourself. Writing is sort of like, with all the electronic situations we have now, it's sort of like getting, you know, put away somewhere.
Mm.
And that's too bad.
Well, times are changing, and they're not for the better in many ways.
Well, I don't know.
You know, you've worked with Julie Harris. What, is this like the 14th time you guys have
been
together? It's amazing.
She's my family.
Yeah, I guess so.
And we have a wonderful time. I mean, she is truly a funny, funny person. And once in, well, at the Belle of Amherst is very funny. But when she plays a comedy part like the Gin Game, she's just a wonderful comedian. And then she's so famous for playing all those queens and serious roles.
Right.
But she's a wonderful person. She snuck into the Amherst home years ago and she got shooed away. You know, before, when we first started to do the play, we got kind of nasty letters from Amherst.
Really?
Yes. Saying that we could never come to the house. And then a man named Mr. D'Elia, I remember that name because I went to school with a kid named D'Elia in New York. And he called and said it's because the windows are so filthy and the house is in such disrepair. And I said, they don't show it anymore? And he said, no, they don't show it. And the success of the play and the television show made it possible that the house was renovated.
Oh, see.
And now it's shown on a regular basis.
You actually, I want to also mention that you got some films coming out soon?
I had a film called The First of May.
That was with Julie Harris, right?
Yes, and Mickey Rooney.
Uh-huh.
And the late Joe DiMaggio, would you believe?
Wow.
He plays himself, but he coaches little kids who don't know who he is playing baseball.
Huh.
And it's kind of beautiful.
Is that going to be out soon, or is it already out?
Well, we hope so. It's one of those, you know, waiting for a distributor.
And what about the one with Randy Travis and Ron and
John
Voight?
That's been out, and it's on TV already.
Boys Will Be Boys?
Boys Will Be Boys.
Mm.
It's funny. John Voight's very funny.
He's a talented actor, too.
Oh, yes, he's wonderful. I used to rent a rowboat with him for $2 an hour in Central Park in the late 50s. We're friends that long.
What about Randy Travis? Did he have any acting talent?
Oh, yeah. He's very gifted.
Really?
Very nice man.
Good singer.
And they're so famous and rich, you know, because they're the recordings. He's a very highly regarded recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have these huge trailers and everything. It's kind of, you know, it's wonderful. I always make sure I sit there.
Was there ever a role that you've wanted to play that you never get a chance to play?
No, not really. I have my own play now that I do. Do you know that?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Well, it's called Save It for the Stage.
Yeah.
And we started in Florida, where I direct a lot, and we were going to do it for 4 nights. And it was such a hit, it stayed for 3 months. Which is funny because it was August, September, and October when nobody's supposed to be there, and we were sold out every night.
Hmm.
And it was 400 people, 400 seats. And then I just played it here for a couple of months.
I actually like the last part of the title even better. It's called Save It for the Stage, The Life of Riley.
The Life of Riley.
Which I like because I always loved that TV show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so it's a
But people would call the theater and say, who's playing Riley in The Life of Riley? And they would say, Charles Nelson Riley. They would say, well, no, he's dead. The tall actor with the wig and the glasses, he's dead. And I get that a lot now. People see me like in supermarkets, and they go, we thought you were dead.
Why do you think that is?
Because I should be by now. No, but it's funny. I went to see a friend sing at the Metropolitan last May, La Boheme, my friend Rodney, who's a baritone, and I took my cousin from Connecticut, and we were sitting there talking during the 3 intermissions, and the woman next to me said, excuse me, but you sound just like that comedian, but he's dead. I said, Charles Nelson Riley? She said, yes. I said, I'm much younger. Yeah, I remember him. I get that like once a week anyway.
I think if you're on TV a lot, and then all of a sudden you're not on TV a lot,
yeah,
that people just think it's psychological or something, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure.
You get older, it's hard to get parts. That's true, you know?
Well, it is.
And then no one wants a director on television, although I do it very well. If they're over 25, it's too old already.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I had the same conversation last week with Ed Asner, who told me it's just...
Really?
Yeah,
he's
said
a nice
it's impossible
man.
To... Yeah, it's possible to get jobs acting anymore because all these young kids are taking them.
Yes.
It's kind of tough.
But I always make my own. You know what I mean? Like the Belle of Amherst was a project we made ourselves. It took 8 years that nobody wanted it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we started doing about 1967, and it opened in 1975. Finally, we got the producer to do it because nobody wanted it. You know, no one wanted Emily Dickinson and Julie Harris spouting poetry. We didn't want that.
And then you also came up with the Paul Robeson thing,
yes,
for James Earl Ray Jones. James,
yes,
Earl Jones.
He was quite a marvelous man, Paul Robeson.
Yeah.
And I do a wonderful play that could come to Boston, I hope, sometime, is with Ruby Dee. It's a one-person play,
uh-huh,
called My One Good Nerve.
Uh-huh.
And it's a wonderful play, and she's a great actor.
And we had Ruby on our show.
You did?
Yeah, her and her husband were both on.
From where? Were they from New York?
I'm not sure where they called in. I'm not really sure where they were.
Oh, how nice.
But they were promoting a show that was on, I believe, TV.
Oh, wow.
They had like an anniversary show or something.
Well, they're amazing. They've been married 52 years and
yeah,
they're still at the prom.
Yeah, I believe their 50th anniversary, they had a TV show or something. And
yes,
that's what they were promoting. They also had a book out.
And she has the book of the play, which was a bestseller here in Los Angeles,
mm,
which is called My One Good Nerve. That's her. Her poetry is wonderful.
You know, talking about your My Life of Riley, have you thought, or have you done an autobiography before?
No, but the director of my play, excuse me, is a writer, and he is going to put it all together. Because I have enough to do three plays, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so hard because I have to cut out some of the things that I love to do only because the play was 3.5 hours for the first few weeks. Mm. It didn't bother me or the audience. But no one, you know, no producers want anything that long.
How have you avoided the spotlight of all the tabloids who seem to, you know?
I'm not that famous.
Well, you had a period where you were on the TV all the time.
Yes.
Were you a victim of the tabloids at all?
No, never.
No.
No, never really.
Why do you think you kind of...
You know, sometimes celebrities call themselves.
They do, yeah. They want to get some attention.
They want to get attention, and they sell the story themselves, and then they're also shocked when it comes out. Oh, yeah, a lot of that goes on.
Yeah, well, any publicity is good publicity, right?
Oh, yeah, that's what Mary Garden said. She was an old opera singer.
That's what they say. I think it might be true.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I love Boston, by the way.
Well, we love you.
Boston is a beautiful city. And when I was there with the Bell, I stayed at the Ritz Hotel, and you know, that was 1976. Mm. And it still remains to me my fondest hotel memories. What a beautiful place that was.
It still is.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah, we have some great hotels in Boston.
Like, I have many friends that own ranches. You know, they have ranches in Napa and a ranch in Cucamonga, my friend has. And I'm not that outdoor type. To me, camping and going ranching is a corner suite at the Ritz Hotel in Boston with room service.
Mm.
That's about as rough as I wanted to get.
What was the first thing you ever did as an actor?
Huh?
What was your first job as an actor?
In Tiverton, Rhode Island. There was a company. I was 1950. I guess I was about 18. And it was the ad in the Little Showbiz magazine was for a summer stock company in Tiverton, Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
Called the Metropolitan Players, run by J.C. Carruthers, his name was. And the salary was $10 a week plus luncheon meat. And I thought, that's a strange situation. $10 a week, I can still see it in the air, $10 a week plus luncheon meat. That's kind of odd, isn't it?
Was it an identifiable luncheon meat or unidentifiable?
Well, who knows in those days. And then, well, that didn't last. That closed right away because nobody came. And so we all sort of went over to Newport, Rhode Island, when they had a professional theater, and I was there for the next 2 summers.
Mm.
And that was where I worked with lots of famous people.
Now, how are you feeling? Are you healthy?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Good?
I just got my teeth renewed again.
Yeah.
Yesterday was the end of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had terrible teeth.
And so you're all set with that, and you're feeling good?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm in very good health.
That's good. That's the bottom line of everything, you know.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And if someone like Ossie Davis... He always asks Charles, how are you? And he really means it. He's quite a wonderful man.
Yeah, he is a great guy, and his wife is
I have
well.
A boat, and on the boat, I had about 8 years ago, a rubber horn, a horn that had a big rubber tube at the end, you know, a brass horn with a big rubber bulb.
Right.
That you squeezed for the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went up to take it down, and it all disintegrated and went in my eyes, the rubber,
mm-hmm.
like dust.
Yeah.
So I had to go to an eye doctor, and I hadn't been to an eye doctor in 43 years since 8th grade. I had the same prescription. It seemed to work. So I went to this doctor, who was very nice, Dr. Sharp, and he said, your eyes have improved. You won't need these lenses. I'll give you less strong lenses, and you'll see clearer. And I said, Doctor, I can't jump up and down and think how wonderful, because I know you're happy about that, and it's very nice, but I can't get excited because I can only think, my God, if you were only the dentist. You know, because for 47 years that I didn't go to the eye doctor, I lived in the dentist chair.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's always something, though.
There's always something.
Yeah, you mentioned your boat. You have it, Wooden Marina Del Rey, right?
Yeah, La Boheme, it's called. And it was written up in Opera News because her name is La Boheme, and I have a lot of friends who are famous singers who have come on the boat that have sung in La Boheme. But
Well, yeah.
I got a lot of letters from New England,
yeah,
especially around Boston, because other people have boats called Lobawane. So I got all these pictures, and they all were beautiful boats.
Well, I'm still waiting for my invitations on your boat, but, you know.
I Do you ever get out here?
Yeah, once in a while I get out to California.
Well, you have my phone number.
Yeah.
So please call me.
All right.
All right.
I want to remind people that if you would like to see the work of this man, Charles Nelson Reilly, you can see The Belle of Amherst with Julie Harris at Boston Schubert Theater.
Yay.
1 week only, Tuesday, February 6th through Sunday, February 11th. And it is a wonderful production. And if you want to get tickets, you can call 1-800-447-7400 or go to the Schubert Theater box office, 265 Tremont Street in Boston. And I want to thank you.
7-7-7-400. What a good number.
Yeah, it is a good number, yeah. I'm sure that they paid big bucks for that, 447-7400.
No, but it's a beautiful play because the words, I think she was our greatest writer.
She, well, you know,
you know
it's,
the
it's
letters, or the play is all from her letters, yeah. And she was extraordinarily funny.
She, you know, it's an interesting thing, though, I mean, because the life that she had, her grandfather was the guy who started Amherst College.
Yes.
Her dad was a congressman.
Yes.
She was raised in such a rigid atmosphere, and yet
yes.
She escaped that rigidity, but it certainly made what she was. You know,
and she never was published in her lifetime?
Yeah, she had, well, I think that she was published like 10
yeah,
poems.
But anonymously.
Yeah, yeah.
And what she did was she just knew everything, and she was ahead of her talent.
Way ahead.
And she was very, very, I love the funny things she said.
Yeah,
and
sure.
The audience screams. Mm. And it's like a comedy at times, like Neil Simon. And it's her very words, because Miss Harris won't do it unless it's true. That she drives me crazy. Miss Harris will do nothing on the stage in any part unless it's true.
Wow.
You can't say, could you fake it, dear? You can't tell that to her.
Mm. She's a true lady of the theater.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And I want to thank you so much for
taking time. Well, I'm very honored to talk to you.
And hopefully we'll talk another
time.
Probably
my only show this month.
Keep well.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
And continued success.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.